This video presentation reviews the life of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam. It provides an overview of his minor and major occultations. Imam Muhammad ibn Hassan, may God hasten his reappearance, also known as Al-Mahdi, was born on the dawn of the 15th of Sha'ban in the year 256 Hijri in Samarra. He is known by various titles which reflect his elevated status, that he is alive, and that he is the Imam of our time. He is known as Al-Mahdi, or Guided One, Sahib al-Zaman, or Master of the Age, Muntazar, or Awaited One, Hujjatullah, or Proof of God, Baqiyatullah, or whom God has left on earth as his last proof, and Al-Qa'im, or one who stands up against injustice. Imam Mahdi was the only child of Imam Hassan al-Askari alayhi salam. His mother, Najis Khatun, was a Roman princess and the granddaughter of the Roman emperor. When living at the palace, she saw a miraculous dream in which Prophet Jesus and some of his apostles were preparing for the arrival of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, Imam Ali alayhi salam, and some of the children of Imam Ali alayhi salam. When Prophet Muhammad arrived, he addressed Prophet Jesus and proposed for the marriage of Imam al-Askari with Najis Khatun. Prophet Jesus then asked his apostle Saint Peter, who was also Najis Khatun's forefather, to accept the proposal, and Saint Peter happily accepted. Prophet Muhammad then recited the marriage contract for Najis Khatun and Imam al-Askari. After this dream, Najis Khatun saw other miraculous dreams, and as a result, she converted to Islam. After a while, she received an instruction in her dream to secretly follow the Roman troops, who were deployed for a war against the Muslims. She followed the instruction and was arrested by the Muslim troops and brought to Baghdad to be sold as a slave. Imam Hadi, aware of this incident through his divine knowledge, sent someone from Samarra to Baghdad with detailed instructions to purchase and transfer Najis Khatun to Samarra. Imam Hadi then married her to Imam al-Askari and gave her the good news of becoming the mother of a son who would fill the earth with justice after it would have been filled with oppression. One of Imam Askari's main concerns during his imamate was to protect the life of his only child, Imam Mahdi, who would inherit the imamate after him as the last Shia imam. Imam Askari kept Imam Mahdi's birth a secret, even from his close family members. By God's miracle, Imam Mahdi's mother, Najis Khatun, did not show any signs of an expecting mother, similar to the miracle of Prophet Moses' mother, who had also not shown any signs of an expecting mother because God had wanted to save her son from the Pharaoh. On the night of Imam Mahdi's birth, Imam al-Askari asked his aunt, Hakima, Imam Hadi's sister, to stay at his home and help with Najis Khatun's delivery. Hakima was shocked because she had not known that Najis Khatun was expecting. Hours later, at dawn, Imam Mahdi was born secretively and opened his eyes to this world. After Imam Mahdi's birth, Imam al-Askari continued keeping his son's existence a secret. The Imam's intention was to protect his son's life from enemies, particularly the Abbasid government. However, Imam al-Askari needed to inform or provide hints to his Shias, especially the Shia scholars and representatives, about the birth of his son. After the birth of Imam Mahdi, Imam Askari asked Uthman ibn Sa'id al-Amri, his top representative in Samarra, to donate a large amount of bread and meat to the needy and to sacrifice some sheep. The Imam also informed his representative in Qom, in Iran, about the birth of Imam Mahdi in a letter. This news brought great happiness to the Shias of Qom. While being confined in Samarra, the capital of the Abbasids, Imam Askari only showed Imam Mahdi to certain trusted companions. On one special occasion, around 40 of the trusted Shia scholars and representatives had gathered in Imam Askari's house in Samarra. The Imam used this opportunity to show them his young son, Imam Mahdi, and introduced him as their next Imam. There was an excessive amount of pressure on Imam Askari during his short imamat of about 6 years. The Imam's activities in Samarra, the capital of the Abbasids, were intensely monitored by the government, and his interactions with his representatives and the people were significantly limited. The Imam was pressured due to two main reasons. First, Imam Askari was the leader of the Shias, who did not accept the legitimacy of the Abbasid government. The Shias had grown to be large in numbers and were widespread in the Abbasid territory. The undeniable influence of the Shias and their leader, Imam Askari, could not be ignored by any of the Abbasid caliphs. Second, the Abbasids had received the news of the Prophet's prophecy about the last Shia Imam, Imam Mahdi, who would establish justice on the earth. They feared Imam Mahdi would endanger their government and were looking for him to eliminate him. Imam Askari's circumstances were an opportunity for him to train the Shias for his son's minor occultation when the Shias would not have direct access to their Imam and would need to communicate with him through writing. This is why the majority of the Imam's communications with his Shia followers and representatives were through exchanging letters. Imam Askari was the first Shia Imam who primarily communicated with the Shias by letters rather than meeting them in person. The Imam respected and highly regarded the Shia scholars because they would guide the people to the true teachings of the Prophet and the Imams. Through this, the Imam prepared the Shias for the upcoming time when they would have to refer to the Shia scholars for their religious affairs. The Imam also expanded the networked organization of his representatives as a system of managing the affairs of the Shia community, and he organized it to be managed without his direct role. Due to the Abbasid government's enmity for Imam al-Askari, the Imam was imprisoned multiple times during his short imamat. Eventually, Mu'tamid, the Abbasid caliph, ordered the Imam's poisoning due to his concern about Imam Askari's influence on the government. Mu'tamid wanted to eliminate the Imam before the Imam could have any offspring to inherit the imamat. Although Mu'tamid had secretly poisoned the Imam, he was afraid that his plot would be revealed. When the Imam was on his deathbed, Mu'tamid isolated the Imam from his followers and the outside world and ordered his trusted close ones to stay in the Imam's house and continuously report the Imam's condition to him. They closely monitored the Imam's condition for several days until the Imam's martyrdom at the young age of 27. Imam Askari had the shortest duration of imamat compared to the other Shia imams, which lasted for less than 6 years. The historical records show Imam Mahdi's presence by his father's deathbed before his martyrdom. Miraculously, Imam Mahdi's presence was not observed by the government agents who were monitoring the imam. We'll be right back. When Mu'tamid was informed about the Imam's martyrdom, he sent his agents to search the Imam's entire house for any trace of a possible heir. He also sent some female agents to inspect the woman in the Imam's house and to inquire if any of them were expecting. There was a suspicion about one female worker in the Imam's house who seemed like she might be expecting. Mu'tamid asked his trusted servant to keep her isolated to validate the suspicion. She was kept isolated for about 2 years, but did not show any sign of pregnancy. When the Imam's close companions and family members were about to pray over his body, the Imam's brother, Ja'fa, stepped forward to lead the prayer. At this time, Imam Mahdi, less than 4 years old, approached Ja'fa, pulled on his cloak, and told him, "Oh uncle, step back, as I am more deserving than you to lead the prayers over my father." Ja'fa, who had not expected to be stopped by a child, was shocked and moved back unintentionally. Imam Mahdi then led the prayer on his father's body and disappeared quickly after. Imam Mahdi's presence proved his existence to his family members and the close companions of Imam Askari. Later, a big funeral procession was held for Imam al-Askari in Samarra by the Abbasid government to portray to the public that the government was innocent regarding the Imam's martyrdom. Imam Mahdi became an imam after the martyrdom of his father when he was just 3 years and 7 months old. His imamate was not challenged by the Shias because of his young age. The Shias had already validated and believed in the imamate of Imam Jawad alayhi salam and Imam Hadi alayhi salam at their young ages of 7. Thus, the age was not a barrier for the Shias to accept the imamate of a young boy. Imam Askari's brother, Ja'far, continued his ignorance even after witnessing the prayer of Imam Mahdi over the body of Imam al-Askari. Ja'far lacked the divine knowledge of the Shia Imams and had a corrupt character. Ja'far proceeded to introduce himself as the next Shia Imam, but he failed to prove his imamate and to convince the Shias. He instead became known among the Shias as Ja'far the Liar. After the burial of Imam al-Askari, Ja'far came to Mu'tamid's minister and asked the Abbasid's approval for himself as the next Shia Imam. His request was faced with an insulting and harsh reaction from the minister who responded to him, "The Abbasid Caliph has used its entire power to change the belief of the Shias of your father and brother, but has failed. If you are an Imam of the Shias, you would not need the Caliph's approval, and if you are not an Imam of the Shias, you will never reach it." Ja'far continued his efforts to introduce himself as the successor of Imam al-Askari and the next Shia Imam. A group of people once came to Samarra to deliver the Islamic dues from the Shias of Qom and northwestern Iran. Upon their arrival in Samarra, they were informed about the martyrdom of Imam al-Askari. They were referred to Ja'far as Imam Askari's successor. Upon meeting Ja'far, they asked him to reveal the names and the amounts of the Islamic dues they had brought to Samarra for delivery. Ja'far responded harshly by saying, "You expect me to know the knowledge of the unseen, which only belongs to God." To which they responded, "Imam Askari would inform us of the names and the amounts in the packages in our previous deliveries to him, If you are an imam, you would also know the names and the amounts in the packages, like Imam Askari. They emphasized that they were entrusted by the Shias to deliver the packages safely to Imam Askari, and if he could not prove that he is an imam, they would return the packages back to their owners. Ja'far was disappointed about losing the packages and tried to forcefully seize them with the caliph's power, but he failed to gain the caliph's support. When these individuals could not find the Shia imam to deliver their packages to, they decided to return them to their owners. When they left Samarra, someone approached them, called them by their names, and asked them to follow him to meet their imam. They followed him and met Imam Mahdi, who informed them about the names and the amounts in the packages. They happily submitted the packages to the imam and asked their questions from him. The imam told them not to bring any more deliveries to Samarra and to submit them to his representative in Baghdad. The imamate of Imam Mahdi began with the minor occultation, which lasted about 69 years. During this long period, four Shia scholars were the points of contact between the imam and the Shias. These four scholars were referred to as the special deputies of Imam Mahdi and were appointed by the imam for this special role. The Shias would pass their letters with questions or requests to the special deputy of the imam and would receive the imam's response back through him. This method of communication was not a new method for the Shias, as they had experienced it in the past during the imamate of the previous Shia imams, especially during the imamate of Imam al-Askari, whose main method of communication had been through letters. Imam Mahdi would respond to the letters with the same handwriting known to the Shias as Imam Askari's, because his intention was to remove doubts about his presence and to strengthen the Shias' hearts about the authenticity of their communications. The Shias would find Imam Mahdi's letters in accordance to the letters of Imam al-Askari in both their style and content. By the imam's will, the special deputies had some special signs, such as informing the Shias of the unseen future to prove their connections to the imam. The minor occultation was a period for the Shias to be trained for the major occultation of Imam Mahdi, when they would not have access to their imam even by exchanging letters. The first special deputy of Imam Mahdi was Uthman ibn Sa'id al-Amri, who was a companion of Imam Hadi ever since he was 11 years old. He was a loyal companion of Imam Hadi and was highly trusted by him. During Imam Hadi's life in Samarra, the capital of the Abbasids, he was under intense surveillance by the Abbasid government. The imam could not always manage the hidden network organization of his representatives, so he had appointed Uthman ibn Sa'id to secretly manage the affairs of this organization from Samarra during the last 10 years of the imam's life. Uthman ibn Sa'id's role continued during the imamate of Imam Askari. He was Imam Askari's top representative in Samarra and managed the other representatives in the imam's network organization. He was often the point of contact for the imam's representatives who wanted to transfer the collected Islamic dues and the letters to and from the imam. His cover job was an oil seller. He would often hide the collected Islamic dues and the letters to the imam inside the oil containers and would transfer them to the imam's house. Imam Askari had introduced Uthman ibn Sa'id as his trusted representative to the Shia on various occasions, and when Imam Askari was martyred, Uthman ibn Sa'id managed his burial. His high status in the eyes of Imam Hadi and Imam Askari was well known among the Shias, so his selection as Imam Mahdi's special deputy was accepted by the Shias. Uthman ibn Sa'id took control of the hidden network organization of representatives among the Shia communities across the Islamic territory. By this time, the Shia communities had widely spread across the Islamic territory and were present in Iraq, Iran, Hejaz, Yemen, and Egypt. Uthman ibn Sa'id began his role as the Imam's special deputy in Samarra right after Imam Askari's martyrdom. The historical record suggests that while Imam Mahdi had just begun his imamate with the minor occultation, his hidden primary residence was still in Samarra. After a while, with the Imam's approval, Uthman ibn Sa'id permanently moved from Samarra to Baghdad and continued his activities from there. Mu'tamid, the Abbasid Caliph, moved the capital of the Abbasids from Samarra to Baghdad too, and Samarra lost its significance. There are limited historical records about the activities of Uthman ibn Sa'id as the Imam's special deputy. This could be attributed to the excessive pressure of the government on the Shias and their representatives. Uthman ibn Sa'id continued his activities undercover and used his career as an oil seller to conceal his role. Also, since Imam Askari's martyrdom, the government was looking for any trace of his successor, Imam Mahdi. Thus, Uthman ibn Sa'id advised the Shias to not mention the name of Imam Mahdi, as this could trigger the government to increase the surveillance of the Shias and their hidden network of representatives. Uthman ibn Sa'id's role as the deputy of Imam Mahdi lasted until his death. This short period is estimated by some to be around 5 years. Prior to his death, Uthman ibn Sa'id informed the Shias about the appointment of his son, Muhammad, by Imam Mahdi as the next special deputy. Imam Askari had foretold about the appointment of Muhammad ibn Uthman as the representative of Imam Mahdi when a group of the Shias from Yemen had visited Imam Askari in Samarra. Imam had introduced Uthman ibn Sa'id as his deputy and had told them, "His son will also be my son's deputy." Imam Mahdi also gave Muhammad ibn Uthman a letter as a proof of his selection. In the letter, the Imam expressed his condolences to Muhammad ibn Uthman for the demise of his father and his high regards for his father. The Imam then appointed Muhammad ibn Uthman as his father's successor and the next special deputy. From Baghdad, Muhammad ibn Uthman continued his father's policy of leading the network organization of the representatives. He would guide the Shias about Imam Mahdi's occultation, that it had occurred by God's decree, and by reminding them of the many narrations from the previous Shia Imams about the occultation of the last Imam. At the same time, he would portray to the Abbasids that Imam Askari had left no successor as the next Shia Imam to convince the Abbasids that the Shias were without an Imam and were no longer a threat to the government. Ever since the establishment of the Abbasid government, the Shia Imams and their followers had not accepted its legitimacy. Muhammad ibn Uthman's policy was to distract the Abbasids from putting pressure on the Shias and the hidden network of the representatives. Like his father, he banned the Shias from revealing Imam Mahdi's name, as this could have posed a threat to the Shias from the Abbasids and caused the government's sensitivity to the Shia communities and their activities. Imam Mahdi would also guide and help his Shias to overcome their challenges. In one incident, Mu'tazid, the Abbasid Caliph, received a list with the names of the representatives in the hidden network organization of the Shias. He ordered undercover agents to go with money to each of the representatives, pretending to pay the Islamic dues. His intention was to confirm the representatives' affiliations to the network organization and to arrest them. To protect the representatives, Imam Mahdi issued a letter with an instruction to the representatives that they should not receive any Islamic dues and should pretend that they are unaware of such a role. The Imam's message was passed to the representatives and saved them from the conspiracy of the Abbasid Caliph. The agents came to the representatives and even insisted to deliver the Islamic dues, but were faced with the representatives denying such a role, so they failed in their mission. Muhammad ibn Uthman was a scholar of religion and had authored multiple books on the Islamic laws. He had received his knowledge from Imam Askari, Imam Mahdi, and his father. He passed his books to the next special deputy before his death. Despite his knowledge, he would not engage himself in religious debates about the Shia theology and beliefs. His intention was to keep his main role as the special deputy of the Imam hidden from the government. The role of Muhammad ibn Uthman as a special deputy lasted for about 40 years, the longest period among the other special deputies of Imam Mahdi. So the majority of the communications between the Shias and Imam Mahdi occurred during his time. Various narrations and supplications from Imam Mahdi were narrated by Muhammad ibn Uthman to the Shias. Supplications such as the famous Dua al-Iftitah, which was recommended to be recited every night during the month of Ramadan, and Dua Samat, which is recommended to be recited in the closing hours before sunset on Fridays. Muhammad ibn Uthman also told the Shias that Imam Mahdi participates in Hajj every year, and that the Imam sees the people and knows them while the people see the Imam and do not recognize him. Before his death, Muhammad ibn Uthman introduced Hussein ibn Ruh al-Nawbakhti, one of his trusted assistants and representatives, as the next special deputy. He told the Shia elders and followers that he was entrusted with the mission from Imam Mahdi to make this announcement. Muhammad ibn Uthman, who had been informed by Imam Mahdi about his approaching death, would refer the Shias to deliver their Islamic dues to Hussein ibn Ruh as far as about 2 years prior to his death. His intention was to familiarize the Shias with the next special deputy of the Imam. The role of Hussein ibn Ruh as the Imam's special deputy lasted for about 21 years until his death. He was socially popular among the Muslims of various theological backgrounds. Despite his social status, due to the conspiracies against him, he was imprisoned by the Abbasids for about 5 years. As the special deputy, Hussein ibn Ruh took control of the network organization of the representatives and managed it from Baghdad. He tried his best to guide the Shias and strictly confronted any deviation in the Shias' beliefs. In one incident, when Hussein ibn Ruh was in the Abbasid prison, one of his representatives deviated and spread false beliefs amongst the Shias. While in the prison, Hussein ibn Ruh informed the Shia elders and his other representatives about the false beliefs of that representative and asked them to distance themselves from him. He also informed them about a letter from Imam Mahdi in which the Imam had falsified and denounced the belief of that representative. Hussein ibn Ruh's efforts as a special deputy of Imam Mahdi proved to be effective in guiding the Shias. As the special deputy, Hussein ibn Ruh was a point of contact between the Imam and the Shias. The Shias would seek guidance and ask their requests from the Imam in writing. Once, one of the Shia scholars of Qom gave a letter to Hussein ibn Ruh to pass to the Imam. In this letter, he asked the Imam's prayer to be blessed with a child, as he did not have any children. The Imam responded in a letter that he had prayed to God for him and soon he would be blessed with two sons. As a result of the Imam's prayer, God blessed the scholar with two sons, whom he named Muhammad and Hussein, and both of them became Shia scholars. Muhammad became a noble scholar, known by the name Sheikh As-Saduq, or Ibn Babuwai, the author of some notable books such as Man La Yahsuruhu Al-Faqih, which is among the top four books of the Shia Hadith collection, and Uyun Akhbar al-Rizā, a comprehensive book about the life of Imam Rizā alayhi salam. He was proud of coming to this world as a result of the Imam's prayer. Prior to his death, Hussein ibn Ruh informed the Shias about the appointment of Ali ibn Muhammad al-Samuri, one of his trusted assistants and representatives, as the next special deputy by the Imam. Ali ibn Muhammad had a very short period of service of 3 years as the fourth and last special deputy. He took control of the network organization of the representatives and managed it from Baghdad. Prior to his death, Ali ibn Muhammad showed the Shias a letter that he had received from Imam Mahdi. This letter was the last communication between Imam Mahdi and the Shias during the minor occultation. In this letter, the Imam informed Ali ibn Muhammad of his approaching death in 6 days and told him to prepare for it. The Imam told him not to appoint anyone as the next special deputy since the major occultation was going to begin soon. The Imam continued that his reappearance would only be by God's decree, which would occur after a long time, when the hearts would have hardened and the earth would have filled with injustice. The Imam mentioned two signs for the time of his reappearance: the uprising of Sufyani, an evil person from the descendants of Abu Sufyan, Muawiyah's father, who would rule the Syrian region, and a loud cry in the sky. The Imam then told the Shias that anyone who claimed to have any direct connection to him before the occurrence of these two signs is a liar. As the Imam had foretold, Ali ibn Muhammad died after 6 days, on the 15th of Sha'ban, in the year 329 Hijri. When Ali ibn Muhammad was on his deathbed, the Shias asked him about whom they should refer to as the next deputy of Imam Mahdi. He responded that he did not have any instructions from the Imam to appoint anyone after himself. Even at his last moments, he was asked again about whom the Shias should refer to as the next special deputy. He responded that God has a plan, referring to the major occultation which will prevail. These were his last words before his death. With his death, the minor occultation ended after about 69 years. With the end of the minor occultation, the major occultation of Imam Mahdi began, and it continued until today. During the major occultation, the Imam is living behind covers, and the Shias cannot directly access him or communicate with him. The Imam reaches out to the people, particularly the Shia scholars and the followers, directly or indirectly to guide them on their affairs and problems. There are many such stories which have been narrated throughout the history ever since the occultation of the Imam. It is mentioned that the Imam is like the sun behind the clouds, which means that though we cannot see the Imam directly, we are still receiving the blessings of his presence. The Imam will be in the major occultation until a time that is only known by God. Upon God's will, Imam Mahdi will reappear to fill the earth with justice and demonstrate the peak of humanity and prosperity on the earth. Prophet Jesus will also come after the reappearance of Imam Mahdi and will follow the Imam in establishing justice on the earth.